All right, y'all. Welcome to the very first episode of Three Man Break. You can find us at slant.com. That's SLAENT.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Three Man Break. That's the number three, man and break, all one word. Basically, what this show is going to be about is hoops. You know, we're going to be talking about coaches, talking about player movement, talking about rumors, talking about just random hoop stuff. And we want to release about three episodes a month, and that's going to be like an episode a week to make up one massive episode at the end of the month. We're also going through some things here, you know, finding out if people are interested or not. And as we keep going along, our audio quality is going to keep getting better. So, you know, just stick with us and let us know what you think. All right, so this is our first episode. Give a shout out to the homies at Slant. You know, we doing it like we do it.
Yeah.
So let me run through who we got on the panel today. We got my homeboy, Die. He'll be out here with us for a minute. And Morris, you know, dude is so well-spoken. You know what I'm saying? And you got me, Black Ace. So I'm just going to throw it out there, guys. Tell them a little bit about yourself, you know? What teams do you follow? And, you know what kind of players do you like?
All right, well, I'll throw it out there early. I'm probably the only Charlotte Hornets / Charlotte Bobcats fan you met in real life. I was there for the struggle, 7-52. I was there when they lost the team. I was there when we was over there champion Jeff McInnes at point guard. I seen all that. Sean May struggle with weight. It's rough being an NBA fan when we got a real team, man. But it's going to come around eventually. We can all be Lakers fans.
All right, Morris, let them know what you got here. Who you represent?
I'm out in L.A. I'm a Lakers fan.
So why does it sound like an AA meeting and everything? You know, I'm Morris, I'm a Lakers fan.
That's what it's been feeling like the last couple of years, following the Lakers.
I'm not going to like lie about it at all. Like, seeing the Lakers go through it has been a great time in my NBA fan life. Like, I've seen so many Lakers jerseys just disappear. And, yo, when Kobe's finally going for real, like, you know, amazing, you know, going away party for him. But when he leaves, a lot of Lakers fans are going with him. All of them already away at Golden State. You see how they change out jerseys real quick, man.
The Lakers have always been a big bandwagon type of fan, you know, type of fan base. But, you know, dudes like Morris who rep, you know, that purple and gold all the way, I got to respect that. You know, like, you got to go through your team. They go through their rough patches, you know.
And my experience is almost the complete opposite of DY's, because I'm in my late 20s, so when I started watching, it was like right around the time Shaq came.
Yeah, you went through a little bit of that Van Exel period.
Yeah, the Divot years of not quite that great.
But then after that, you had them great rings and great championship runs over there, you know, with Shaq and Kobe and, you know, Robert Horry, Big Shot Bob, and, you know, Fisher and all them guys, man.
Yeah, and before Powell came over, there was a good Smush Parker and Chris Mim years.
Those were the best years.
But you know what, though? There is something to be said about, like, you know, seeing Kobe be so free in those years. Like, during his prime, when he was just out there just shooting 45 times, 60 times a game, or whatever.
Yeah, he was shooting. He was in pickup games.
Yeah. He was just so free, you know? It was like, he went from them championship runs to playing just like whatever ball. You know, it was like,
yeah, no one's going to judge you for not passing it to Chris Mim.
Chris Mim, he put it down though, right? Nah. Where is Chris Mim anyway? You know, do you keep in touch with him more?
No, I don't. I think he was actually at Kobe's last game. I think there's a few, like, how did you afford to get in the building?
A lot of that in that last game. Yeah, man, I know tickets weren't cheap. See some guys over there like, hold up. What's his name? The classic Slava Medvedenko. Like, I know he was in the building.
I know you're broke. How'd you get here?
Yo, like, who hooked you up, man? Straight up.
All right. Well, about me, you know, my tragedy is I'm a Supersonics fan. Yeah, you know how that goes. I don't have a team. I'm a straight teamless fan of the NBA, which in some ways has been a little bit liberating. It allowed me to let my full bitterness come out over the years. But yeah, I just kind of follow the NBA as a whole now, you know, like I don't really follow or root for a team. I follow Seattle players, which is kind of sad. You know, somebody will bring.
No,
up
I feel you on that. Mm-hmm. Like happened to me too when Hornets left the first time. You know, there was no team, closest team around. Like, you know, I don't mess with Atlanta. I'm sorry, I can't.
Atlanta doesn't mess with Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? But it was strange though. I went through a moment, you know, of like, all right, I'm just gonna follow the Trailblazers, you know, because you know they're the next, you know, team in the Northwest. But I just couldn't do it. Like I tried to root for them, but I've always hated them. Because they're like our RFI rival, you know. We've always had that little like rivalry between each other, and there's no way I can root for them. I wanted to. I'm sorry to the Trailblazers fans, you know, because they had Brandon Roy, you know, they drafted that bum ass center Greg Oden, and you know, I thought they were gonna be, you know, they got Aldridge for a while and stuff like that. They were a good team. And they were kind of fun to watch. They had Nate McMillan. They had all the pieces for something that I would want to root for.
It's just not your team.
Just couldn't do it. So
it's just not your team. Yeah, I feel you.
Once I realized that, you know, I couldn't root for another team like that, then I just gave up on it and just follow the NBA as a whole. But I still love basketball, and that's why we're doing this podcast, you know. Moving on, though, you know, after this is how the NBA has changed. Now, we've heard this come up a lot.
Yeah.
The topic of analytics. I just want to kind of lightly brush on this with you guys, you know. Where do you stand on it? I mean, I've heard all the arguments. I've hear a lot of stuff. But, you know, as a fan, a little more than casually follows the game.
See, I didn't care about analytics until I heard Larry Brown say that he hated analytics. And being a Charlotte Bobcats fan, I'm like, hold on. Like, we had the worst offense in the league for, like, pretty much the team's whole life. And I'm just seeing, it seems like we don't shoot corner threes at all. And you start looking at the numbers like, it's the most effective bucket in basketball right now. And we don't do it at all. Maybe that's why we're not scoring. You know, we can only blame the players so much, but I mean, you can't play 15 feet from the rim anymore. The game's bigger than that now. Guys are too athletic, they're too fast, and you got to make the most out of every possession. You just cannot allow a team to just have entire possessions off on defense. When guys can just play a 2-3 zone and just know comfortably that you can't do anything about it, that is a rough way to watch a basketball game as a fan. Just watch your team come down every single time and just struggle, grind for every basket. Like, the game's changed. It's even changed to the college level. You know, some AAU levels as well, you know, but it's rough to watch when your team's not on the same page anymore. Like, yeah, every team can't be the Golden State Warriors. Okay, cool. But you can still have an offense that belongs in this decade. You know what I'm saying?
I understand that. Yeah, I get that a lot. But, I mean, it's the analytical standpoint of it all, though, is like where does it become numbers versus, like, you know, worrying about chemistry and blending these talents together?
Well, the perfect example is Houston right now. I mean, that's a hugely, you know, analytics leaning team, and the fact that you can chuck threes, get yourself into a game, blow a game open, but if the game of basketball is still basketball, it exists within the 3-point line as well. So I mean, you got to have a little bit of both, you know. Yes, it's effective, but you got to find that line that gels with the team. And Houston's a team that just never really found that chemistry at any point in the last couple years, you know.
Well, I just think that in general, like it's a tool. You know, analytics is a tool. It allows us to kind of get a glimpse of how a player has played over the years, what he can do, what he cannot do in general. But I've always felt that some teams, especially like you said, Houston, really lean on it too much as, like, you know, in my opinion, the game is more complex. There's more moving pieces than, say, like baseball. Baseball is the batter versus the pitcher. And those numbers don't change too much. You know, you can look at a dude's, you know, batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, all that stuff. Those numbers generally stay, you know, where they're supposed to stay. But in basketball, you got the team chemistry, you got who they're playing with, you got, you know, what offense they're running, who's their coach, who's their assistant coaches, and all this stuff can really change what a player does, you know. So I always thought analytics sometimes, you know, can be looked at too heavily.
Another thing is about analytics is that they can also show you you know, an effectiveness that you didn't know was there. And okay, last season in particular, like Steph Curry, like we knew he was breaking the game to seeing this guy come down the court and just launch a three, but you didn't know exactly how game breaking he was until you looked at the actual analytic numbers. When it got to the point where he's like, he has the Wilt Chamberlain effect from beyond a 3-point line, where it's like, what do you even do when this guy's on? There's no, you know, there's no way to guard someone that far out. It just breaks the game on a fundamental level. You cannot play defense on it. And analytics showed that too.
Analytics did show that, you know, I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I'm just saying, even without looking at the analytics, you could watch a game, right? And see this guy shooting from the hash marks. That's a good shot, you know? And, you know, if you follow basketball at all, you can say like, yo, this dude here is redefining the game. You can just see that with your eyes. And that's why, like, sometimes, like, I think the analytics is I wouldn't say overblown, because I think it's a great tool. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, you know, the analytics tell us that. But, yeah, watching this dude come down the court and just launch these threes, like, it's all good. Like, that's a normal good shot.
Yeah.
And making
it's ridiculous.
He's got a 40% clip. You can just see that, like, okay, wow, that he is breaking the game. So, I mean, you know, I just kind of wanted to see what people were thoughts on that. Morris, do you have any thoughts on these analytics? I mean, where do you stand from? I mean, I know you went through this whole Byron Scott, you know, kind of era there in L.A. So what are your thoughts on analytics?
I have two minds on analytics. They I think for the most part, they do point out who's better than who. If you have like a, if you're second guessing your eyes.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not sure if this guy is so much better than this guy. Analytics can kind of like, if it's like a 50-50, like, well, maybe this guy's a little bit better. But then there are those cases like, didn't, it was like Amir Johnson was supposed to be like the fucking next girl.
Advanced stat. Analytics had him literally better than Amari Stoudemire for like 3 years straight.
Yeah, so there are those cases where it does make you kind of guess and kind of displays that it's not a perfect science quite yet.
I think that the one guy that really stood out to me for the longest time, I didn't really believe in analytics that much just because I wasn't, you know, aware of what they meant to basketball, but Rajon Rondo for the Celtics in those last couple years where they're trying to keep the core together. When it got to the point where people were saying, oh, Rajon Rondo is a beast. He's an all-star point guard, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. I'm like, okay, cool. Then analytics started to show that, you know, when he got injured, the team was literally better without any point guard than Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, I see that. I one thing that I do think that the analytics that I think offensive analytics stats are what they are. Like, I think the eyeball test for those work, you know, I wouldn't say as well, but I think that, you know, you can give a comparison, like, okay, we're watching this dude play. Oh, okay, he can shoot at this percentage. Okay, whatever. I think the defensive stats of analytics is where analytics shine. Because you don't realize how bad somebody is on defense until you look at their analytics stats. Like Greg Monroe.
Yeah.
Greg Monroe, like, you know, the eyeball test, he's a big dude. He it's not like he's not trying. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. When you watch him play, he's out there, he's hustling, you know.
Command space.
He's not giving up. But he's just bad on defense. And you don't really see that. You know, you can see it in the game, like, oh, he gave up his points or whatever. But once you look at the stats, you can see this dude is, like, almost historically bad at defending the rim. And, you know, that's, I think, where analytics really shine. Like, you know, finding out who is playing, who knows how to play defense.
I believe that.
Yeah. I think offense is, I don't want to say it's easy to eyeball. But I think offense, most people can look at a dude and watch him come down and, you know, get in the post or shoot a three or do what he do and be like, okay, that was a good shot, that was a bad shot or whatever. But it's that, you know, it's that defensive analytics that really, really, you know, where analytics can be so important, which is why I don't understand Houston at all.
Yeah.
Because they've only, you know, put together one or two defensive-minded players on that entire team. I mean, you know, you had Howard, and then, you know, you had Beverly, who they found by mistake. I mean, everybody else has always been just to get free throws or three-pointers. You know, there's never been any other, like, real mindset behind this. I don't see what analytics they're actually using over there in Houston, you know? So,
I mean, yeah, and it's weird with Houston because they'll add guys like Ariza and Brewer, like, they look like great defenders. You know, they have all the length, they're quick, they, you know, lateral movement, all that kind of stuff, and they both can ball hawk when they want to. But, like, honestly, the team defense for Houston has just been, like, it made no sense how bad it was.
The whole smorgasbord, I guess you could say, didn't have any rhyme or reason to it at all. You know, it was like, you know, you got Harden, and you know, when you get a guy like Harden, you're going to have to be like, all right, he's not going to play any defense. Okay. I mean, that's just, I mean, you see those YouTube mashups and everything on, you know, you can just find him. He doesn't play any defense at all. So you got to deal with that. But after that, the rest of their team just doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah, you, like you said, they brought in Ariza, they brought in Brewer, who are basically the same player.
Yeah.
You know, and they bring them together. And then, you know, you got Howard. So you're supposed to have this anchor, right? And then you just throw in random power forwards that you just find.
Somewhere, God, yeah.
You know, like Jones and, you know, all the rest of these kind of.
Montejunas, yeah.
Yeah. All the, you know, and then you sign Josh Smith and you just kind of just hope something happens, you know? Like,
then you trade to bring Josh Smith back.
Yeah. You know, I don't even understand. I mean, I just don't understand any of the I mean, analytics, you say analytics, and yeah, there's got to be some kind of process behind it. But if you're just looking at random numbers and be like, he has a high percentage, you know, in the 3-point line or whatever, and then that's your team. I don't really call that analytics. That's just kind of like guessing, right? You know?
It doesn't make sense to me. Like, I shouldn't say that. Well, I will say it's like being a Charlotte Hornets fan. Like our team defense being as good as it was last year, it makes no sense to me. Like, if you look at it, who is our defensive stopper inside? Don't say Cody Zeller. It's not Frank Kaminsky, and it's not Al Jefferson. I mean, that's a team that just plays good team defense, but that's on the basketball side. Analytics would tell you that each one of those guys individually is not that good. They'll tell you that Cody Zeller is our best plus-minus player going over the last couple, two years? And I'll tell you that he's the softest.
No, the plus-minus is a fine stat, but the fact that Cody Zeller is your best plus or minus player.
That'll tell you, like, straight up, like, there's something wrong with, you know, you got to believe in the eyeball test to some extent.
Yeah.
So that's my whole stance on it. Like, two teams, again, Houston has all these guys have all the gifts they need to play defense.
Yeah.
And then you see a team like Charlotte, who outside, you know, Kid Gurkha's played defense for a whole team last year.
But that's the thing.
Now, yeah.
That's also the thing with it is that it goes back to what I was saying earlier. There's a lot of moving parts. So you put all these players together. And then the coach implements his scheme or what he wants to do. And if the players buy into it, then analytics is out the window because you got guys like Cody Zeller holding down the middle. You know?
Like, you it's know, just funny every time you say it, man. It's like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it happened. Know, Al Jefferson, you know what I mean? These guys have never been known to play any defense. But yet, as a group, they played solid, great team defense.
And then you see guys like Hibbert who, all, you know, a career of being a great defensive player, then getting it to LA, it's just like, I don't know if it was him, was it the, you know, Byron Scott, but
Hibbert's one of those strange beasts because even when he was a Pacer, he went through, you know, many moments where he just wasn't, you know, doing anything, defense or, I mean, I don't even want to get into Hibbert because Hibbert's an analytic nightmare because the dude is, what is he, like 7'3", 7'2"?
He's a freak, yeah.
He's, but he gets like 5-6 rebounds a game. What's his career average in rebounds? I'm gonna look it up just because I'm
God. It's something embarrassing. I'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, right? Like Hibbert's like one of those players where he just doesn't make sense. He's like, I'm gonna look it up just because I need to know. Yeah, his career average is 6.5 total rebounds.
Well, he's on the floor half the game too.
Yeah. I mean, when he was a Pacer, he was out there for like 30 minutes, you know?
No, I mean like literally on his back because he fell down.
I'm saying.
Yeah, I just don't understand what made Hibbert into what Hibbert is. You know, like he, you know, when he came out of college and, you know, Georgetown has a great, you know, pedigree for centers, you know?
Yeah.
You expected him to be a defensive rebounding kind of guy. You know, just because of his body and his build. And then he turned out to, you know, to have a little game. He had a little offensive game. And then all of a sudden, he just, you know, he just can't rebound anymore. And his defense, He does play good vertical defense. He did in Indiana, at least. You know, in L.A., I don't know what he was doing out there, but he was in Indiana.
With him, I don't know if it's just like some guys, I just think, hey, man, like once you get paid a certain amount, like maybe you good.
There is something to be said about the mentalness, you know, like his whole mental outtake. I mean, I know for a couple of years he was talking that, like, I want to be the best center in the game, or I want to do this, I want to do that. But you didn't quite see that same drive on the floor.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys say that just because, I mean, it feels nice to say. But then you see people who get a good paycheck one good time, or it's contract year, or better yet, you come in like Tyreek Evans and you hot shit the first year.
Yeah.
And it's real easy.
Yeah, Tyreek Evans is another one of those guys that just, you know, had everything going on. But actually, speaking of guys coming in, I want to kind of move on. We've been on this analytics for a little bit. But, yeah, this is summer. We just had the NBA draft. What do you guys think? Well, you got any gems? You see any diamonds in the rough out there?
Yo, okay, I'm a huge Chris Dunn fan. Like, he could have came out last year and been a top five pick, in my opinion. I mean, the guy had injuries and all that, but, like, you don't see floor leaders like this in college anymore. Like, it's easy to say, okay, Tyler Ullis did this, or, you know, it's easy to say that you're just an athletic point guard and you just label him a floor general. You can't name two other players in Providence that did work in the last 5 years. This guy carried them to the tournament and did work each time he had the ball, you know? When it was hard and when it was easy.
I was a little surprised he dropped to five, though. You know, I thought, you know.
Well, Boston did mess up the whole draft. You know?
Yeah, they did. They did kind of throw us for a loop there by drafting Brown at three. What do you guys think about that anyways? I thought that was the first, like, real curveball of the draft.
It doesn't make sense because, like, okay, how is he going to play in Boston? Because he's not better than Evan Turner right now. He's not better than Crowder. He doesn't address any real need. He's not going to come in and be a star. Like, okay, he's going to play forward and do what?
Isn't Evan Turner a free agent, though, going into this?
I mean, yeah, but okay, he's a free agent. But Boston, like, they need all the talent they can get. So, yeah, they can let him go. But, all right, they're not getting KD. Hey, they might bring in Harrison Barnes. But even then, he's not better than Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
He's not better than DeRozan, Nick Batum, all the free agents out there that they would want to get. He's not better than. And he's not better than a backup either. So I'm like, okay, you guys got a project, but with a team that just won 48 wins, they had 48 wins last year. How was he going to help them, you know, beat the other teams who came up in this, like Indiana? Indiana added more talent in like 2 weeks than some teams do in 2 years.
I mean, it's like, to me, Boston had a lot of picks. You know, they had what? They had three first round picks. So if you're going to get a guy that you want to have a project and build on, why would you do it at three? You know, why would you not take someone that can help you right away at three and then, you know, get a project guy maybe later in the draft, you know? I just don't really understand the whole, you know, Danny Ainge's whole outline. You know?
It sounds simple to me. Like, Ainge really thought that he was going to pull up another, you know, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen type thing, but nah, the league, nah, it's not working like that again. You're not going to hit that. You're not going to strike that kind of goal twice. And then what was the, we're going to try and get Kevin Love, what ESPN was talking about. They didn't even come up with Kevin Love. Guys who were easily acquirable, like Serge Ibaka was had for pennies. Oladipo was had for pennies. They didn't add anybody at either of those calibers. Like,
it's kind of weird though, because, you know, we heard the rumors that, you know, the Sixers, they wanted to trade. They had their eye on Dunn, you know? And they wanted to trade one of their centers, Okafor, you know? And it seems like that Ainge was really overvaluing that pick and decided to hang on to it for whatever reason. But
I think it's becoming a history thing now, too, because last year Boston was trying to make moves, too. They were trying to make moves for Winslow and, like, hey, it didn't work. Now, all they had to do was to say, hey, listen, we're going to take Dunn with the first pick. Philly didn't believe him. We'll wait. What you going to do? And they take Jaylen Brown, and guess what? Everybody gets their guy, except Boston.
I think Boston is a victim of bad luck more than anything else. Because they got the third pick in a two-player draft. I mean, if they would have had number one or number two, they could have shipped that out easy.
Yeah, but if you have number one or number two, you don't trade that. I mean, a dude like, you know, Simmons or a dude like Ingram, they're gonna be impact players. They might not be real effective their first year. Most rookies aren't, but they're gonna be stars. at some point in this league. You know, I really believe that. I mean, some people aren't really sold on the kid from Duke yet, but
I'll get to that in a second. But the thing about Boston, like, this was a two-man draft for how many months, though? Like, they knew this point was coming. And at some point, they just kind of thought that, okay, time's on your side. Like, nah, it's not. They should have dealt this pick way back during the beginning of the season, before the trade deadline.
I just really think in general, I mean, like Morris is saying, is that they had bad luck. But I can't say that you put together a decent core. You know, Boston has a decent core. They're just missing a legit star, you know. And they have a great coach in Brad Stevens. You put that all together, you claw your way to the playoffs. I mean, they played incredible basketball last season. I mean,
they did, yeah.
I mean, especially with their comebacks and their defense. I mean, I don't have a stat for it or anything like that, but I swear they had the most comebacks of any team last year. I mean, they would be down at halftime and you think they'd be done, and then all of a sudden they won by 10 points or whatever. But I mean, that's just maybe my memory. I mean, I can't
help but admire Boston, because there's, like, you look at their talent level, like, there is no reason why they can manufacture buckets the way they do.
Yeah, and but so you got all these great ingredients, and then, you know, due to some clever draft or some clever trading earlier, you end up with the third pick. Even though it's not a great draft, I mean, as far as like super impact players off the bat, you know, I mean, who knows? I think a lot of players are going to be decent role players, and maybe even some, yeah, you know, six man or, you know, maybe some fringe all-stars in this draft. I don't think it's as bad as some people say it is, but you're right. It was a two player draft, like, you know, like, but they still ended up with this good pick that they could have flipped for a good player if they had, you know, instead of overvaluing the pick, or they could have at least tried to draft something they needed. You know, they have no frontline help.
Yeah.
None, you know, and, you know, they could have went out and tried to get, you know, trade down, try to get frontline help, you know.
Because here's my thing. It was a two-man draft, but between three and I'll say maybe 10 or 11 or so, all those guys were at the same-ish talent level. Like, I think Dunn stands out among those guys because Ingram and Simmons are both – they're both studs, let's be real. The next guy, in my opinion, is Dunn. But between 3 and 10 or so, like, that's kind of the same talent level. So when they're trying to trade back, everyone's like, nah, we're good. We'll see what you do, and we're going to be happy with that pick. Like, Phoenix, for example, they got plenty of talent just sitting there around the same level, you know?
Oh, yeah, but even if they didn't trade back, at that point, you can draft for need. I mean, I know a lot of people are opposed to that, you know, best player on the board or whatever. But when the best player on the board is probably isn't going to be better than your starters, you know, then at that point, you got to be like, what's the best player in something that I need?
Yeah.
You know, and try to look from there. That's my outlook. And I really think that Boston dropped the ball with that one. You know, I would have, you know, even at that, I would have maybe have gotten, you know, someone a little more polished that could come in and help. Like Buddy might have been a better pick than Brown at that point, you know.
I think they could have went a lot of ways. Like Murray, a real like scoring shooting guard. I love Avery Bradley, but you hear him float around trade rumors all the time. And I'm just like, I mean, Boston, you got to make a big move. Like every other team in the East, like, okay, yeah, the East is not – they're not fielding three or four contenders like the West is. But what, between 3 and 6 seeds last season, they were all the same record of 48 wins.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of those teams getting better, man.
They're getting better, and they're really, you know, the East is actually being really aggressive. I mean, this is kind of a new look for the East the last couple of years. They're trying to get them stars that are from the West, you know, and they're being really aggressive and putting together teams. I think the Magic, even though I think their moves were, you know, kind of head scratching at best, you know, but they're being aggressive.
And they were decisive too. They knew that Tobias Harris wasn't going to fit, and they kind of more or less knew that, hey, Oladipo, we tried it. You know, they tried it really hard, and it just never worked. Plus, they got Fournier and Hezonja too. Hey, you know, I think they're good at shooting guard. They'll be all right.
Yeah. I don't think the shooting guard was the issue. I just think who they got.
Yeah.
You know, because you're going to ask Ibaka to be something he's not over there, and you know, but
that's gonna be fun to watch.
He's gonna be free. I give him that. He's gonna be out there. But
honestly, I think Aaron Gordon's better than Ibaka right now too. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Oh. Ugh. Ugh. I mean,
you can't play him at the same time, so hey.
I think Gordon is a special talent. He needs a point guard that can, you know, that can, you know, Peyton, I like Peyton as a backup. I just don't know if I want him to start. You know?
I would love Peyton as my point guard about 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I feel about Peyton.
When Andre Miller and, you know,
yeah. Go back to Avery Johnson. He's an Avery Johnson throwback, you know, but I think as a backup, I think he's a solid backup. You know, like he's not going to make he makes some mistakes, but he's going to take care of your team while your star players are out. But they need a point guard to pair with Gordon, and getting Ibaka to pair with Gordon or whatever doesn't make any sense to me, but we'll see what they do from here. I mean,
that's what I'm saying though. Like,
actually, I do have one thing about this draft though. Sorry to cut anybody off, but.
No, go ahead.
The number 10 pick in this draft. Do you think the Bucks reach for this pick, or do you think that it's actually going to pan out for them? I mean, I'm one of the few people who actually, I wouldn't say I don't like the kid at 10. I don't like the pick at 10. I think they went a little bit too far out, but I do think he will develop into something. Will it be a good something? I don't know, but I do think he's going to develop into a rotational player. It could be the next, you know, Magic Randolph, or he could be, you know, a good
Magic Randolph.
He could be, you know, but he could end up to be something. He's got the, I mean, of course, you know, everyone looks good on those, you know, highlight mixtapes, you know, but.
He don't even look that good in the highlight mixtapes.
No, but there's something about a big man though. He runs the floor incredibly well. That can be said about a lot of big men that are garbage, but there's something about him that does look a little like he has a little spark of something special in him. And that's just for me. I mean, seeing that. I know you say he doesn't look good in the mixtapes, but what do you think about this pick? I mean, I think that for me was, I mean, outside the Brown pick, that was the biggest real surprise pick of the draft.
And that was news of them taking Maker was coming out ahead of the draft, like by a good minute.
Oh, they were zoomed in on that kid like, and they didn't care. They let the world know, you know, like, we're taking this kid at 10. I mean,
I dare you to take him before 10.
Yeah. I mean, he was projected, you know, I seen him as high as like 19 or maybe, you know, in the 20s, you know, but going at 10, what do you think? I mean, I want to put this out here. What's going on? What do you think?
Man, okay. Here's something that a lot of teams can't say. And it feels weird for me to say it, but Milwaukee, they got the guy they wanted. You know, they said out all these, you know, moving like other players that, you know, subjective, whatever, like, we want them. We got our guy. They left satisfied as hell. And that's something a lot of teams can't say they do. Like Sacramento, they really just like, we took a bunch of centers and that's good, right? Or some teams like, we took the best player available. I guess we can make him fit. But Milwaukee, they left happy as hell. Like, everybody in that whole organization is like, we got our guy, we're good. So I'm like, hey.
In a couple years, they're going to be the longest team.
They were that this season.
Yeah, but I'm talking, ridiculous. Yeah. If this kid actually develops into a player that can get good minutes.
Like, I don't think he will, but I mean.
But you got the Greek freak out there, he's going to be running your point guard.
Okay. I've seen a lot of Project Bigs. But it is hard to teach in any kind of young kid how to play real basketball in the NBA when you're like that size. I don't see Milwaukee developing that talent first off, and I don't see him being the guy who breaks through and does it on his own.
Well, I mean, they do have. I mean, people are split on it, but I think Kidd is a pretty good teacher. I don't think Kidd is a bad coach. Now, can he develop this kid into something, you know, worthwhile? I don't know. But the one thing that I do say about it is that a lot of people have thrown this comparison out, and I laugh when I hear it too. But I'm going to throw it out here because we're talking. Is Kevin Garnett.
Okay, you know who I heard that about last time? Y'all heard Alexis Agenza is the French KG.
Yeah. But you see, they had French in front of that.
But I mean, yo, Larry Brown said it. He's a Hall of Fame coach. He knows what he's talking about. It's easy to say that, especially when they got that frame and that ability when they're that size and that age. But then you see Agenza now. He can't move his feet three steps in a row. Oh no, I can't do that shit. Well,
the one thing that I had always said about that though is that when we watched them KG mixtapes on them grainy, you know, VHS tapes back in the day, KG was playing point guard.
Yeah, that was freakish. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so even though he was playing against the, you know, kids, obviously, you know, 17-year-old kids, he was handling the ball, you know, in a way that we haven't seen a big man do before. Now, when he gets to the NBA, he couldn't do that, obviously. But he had a whole bunch of tool sets. Now, you know, old buddy over there in Milwaukee, he's not on that level. But, you know, he does, you know, he's an interesting looking prospect, though, going into the draft. And especially with this draft being kind of, you know, like you said, people are kind of, you know, so much.
Yo, I'm just laughing at the NBA draft.net. They got him as Chris McCullough. But I'm like, but I mean, I can't hate on the pick. Like Milwaukee, they got a project and they got a spot for a project. They can do that in their organization. All right, cool. I will say that Thon Maker, okay, he's a project, but I know for a fact the kid I do not want, and I feel terrible for saying he's a great kid. Scal, yo.
But it's funny because most teams didn't want Scal, how far he dropped. You know, when he going into the season, they were talking about top 5, top 10 pick, right?
Yo, but his mixtapes were fire. Then you see him trying to rebound in the NCAA. Like, yo, man. Like, Jay Billis said it best. He's getting pushed around by guys who get pushed around.
Yeah. He dropped all the way to 28, though. I mean.
And he shouldn't have. I don't think he should have won the first round. Like, 6-3? Those aren't get drafted numbers.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, of all the kids that really, really fell off, he was one of them. Because they talked real big about him. And, you know.
Yeah, he was. Some said that he was going to go number one overall.
Yeah. He
was, yeah, over Simmons, yeah.
Yeah, he was definitely. Mm-hmm. But he was definitely a top 5 pick lock, like at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he goes.
And then became top 10, and then top 15, then 20.
Then he was like, okay, he's going in the first round probably.
Like, the reason why he came out was because, like, yo, would he even play? Would he even start next year for Kentucky?
Yeah.
That was a real question. Like, yo.
Yeah, they're going to get someone to replace him.
I mean.
They had someone to replace him.
not only is he soft, but his motor, you know, like, he doesn't really seem like he has that. In him, you know, like,
it was hard. It's hard to have a motor and be soft at the same time.
Oh, you know, there's some guy, you know, like. So, I mean, you know, oddly enough, I would say a guy like Fry. You know, he's out there working hard to get his shots off. You know, at least.
Okay, I'll give you that. Because, you know, when he came to the Knicks, he did do that.
Yeah,
but Scott, you know, like, he never had any of that. You know? He wasn't assertive. He couldn't hold his own. He couldn't control his own space. And you know how it is in the NBA. If you can't hold your space as a big man, you have no purpose on the court.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that he got drafted in the first round.
And check this. So when he goes to the D League, he's going to get demolished by guys who are over there hooping for cheeseburgers.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, the thing about it though is them dudes in the D League, they get that one more shot type of mentality. You guys going to eat them up.
Yo, they're going to break him, man.
What's crazy about the Scal situation is he was projected number one overall, and then the player who's basically a carbon copy of him in Thon Maker, who didn't even go to college, goes 18 spots ahead of him.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I guess it's better to be unproven than to know that you're not any good.
Well, there
it's
was
the mis- it's
there
the mystery was, box, man.
There was basically three players like him, though. You know, there was three players like Scal in the draft, and he was the worst of the three, probably, because there's Chris from Washington, yep, and there's Maker from, you know, Canada, Australia, wherever he's from, and then there was Scal, right? And there's Chris has like you know, people talk about he's going to be a bust. He probably will be, but he has like, you know, these kind of Aaron Gordon, you know, Smuck Swift type of bounce and tools, you know. So there's something to be like, okay, you know, he might be something all right. You know, he's got a little bit of Stoudemire look to him. You know, he could be.
Nah, honestly, if he's Keon Clark, my mind will be blown, man.
Oh, I'm not saying he's gonna be this at all, but I'm just saying he has a little bit of tools in him. You know, like what Scott, like basically has nothing. I mean, like he had a little bit of a jumper. You know, he wasn't uncoordinated. You know, he had actually, you know, he can catch the ball, which it sounds funny saying it out loud.
That's a big deal. It's a big deal
for a big man, right? But outside of that, he, you know, he's soft. He doesn't have a motor. You know,
like, here's my thing. He's good against undersized people who won't touch him.
Yeah, well, you know,
and that's a really small niche of guys that's going to ever. Not going to see those people at all anymore.
Yeah, he ain't going to play against himself.
Yeah, I mean, he might be good against Chris or Maker.